you know what? The biggest problem in all of software is basically time zones.
Really?
Yeah. It's in general in human, right? I mean, like if like I think this would be like after we conquer like malaria and cancer
right.
and stuff, then we'll get back to the
time
real
zones.
Meat of it, the time zones.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Pre-Accident Podcast. I'm your loving host, Todd Conklin, and today you are in for a treat. This is always fun, and the podcast is getting interesting. I don't know. I'm kind of loving where everything's going right now. Generally, life's good. I don't know how you're feeling, but it's slowing down. I mean, we're getting close to holidays, so in the United States, Thanksgiving's about to happen. In fact, it may have happened already. I don't know when this will go up. And then after Thanksgiving, we've got the whole festival season, Christmas, et cetera, and that'll be really fun. And then we have December, and I don't know how December is in your workplace, but in my workplace, it's kind of the month that doesn't exist. It's almost a month that kind of, I don't know, nothing happens. Except every once in a while we have some parties, and I like that part of it a bunch, actually. So today's podcast is I'm really excited about this. I'm so pleased that this is happening. I don't even know how to tell you. But our world of reliable systems and high reliability and performance reliability and safety and fatality prevention is screaming into a confluence with other high reliable systems. And what we're going to talk about today, and Dave Zwieback's going to talk about it, and he's great. You're going to love this podcast, is how similar we are on the safety side of the house with people who run very, very important, highly reliable systems in the rest of the world. And that conversation is amazing. Not because I'm especially smart, I would actually suggest I'm not very smart on this topic, but because I love hearing how the highly reliable web availability people, and these are people who do banking and web commercialization and medical healthcare, and these are systems we really need to work every time we want them to work, very important systems that have to be reliable, how they're talking about the same things we're talking about. And that is really interesting to me, how cognitive bias, how retrospective bias, how blame, how punishment, how learning is vital in order to keep their systems reliable as well. Here's what that tells me. We're all on the right track. Or if we're on the wrong track, we're all going down the wrong track together. But I actually think it's the right track. And this podcast is stunningly interesting because you're going to hear about some stuff. And mostly what you're going to hear about is Dave thinking through and sort of having a conversation with me, very introductory. I think we'll probably take this farther around how our worlds come together. But Dave's got a book out, which I'm going to give my highest marks to. In fact, this is the book you want to probably be grabbing immediately. It's called Beyond Blame, Learning from Failure and Success. And I was actually pretty darn familiar with this book, but I acted like actually, I didn't really act like it because Dave knew I was familiar. But I was sort of pretending like a tell me more, you know, to sort of set up the scene so he could promote the book a little. In reality, it's an incredible way to begin the discussion, especially for people who are having difficulties letting go of the old school view, because it tells a story of blame in a system that really can't afford to fail. And it's not an academic book, and yet it is. It's really a narrative. It's a story. And it's a great way to have this discussion. I think you're going to find this podcast incredibly interesting. I'd be shocked if you didn't. I'm going to ask you to listen to it a couple times because I think it's worth listening to and enjoy what Dave has to say. Let's jump into the podcast and we can talk about some stuff afterwards. But beforehand, let's get right into it. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, the Pre-Accident Podcast proudly presents Dave Zwieback and his amazing comments on blame, reliability, and systems.
Yeah, so my name is Dave Zwieback. I have a day job. I am the head of engineering for an analytics company called Next Big Sound that has recently been acquired by a slightly bigger music company called Pandora.
I've heard of them before.
Yeah. You and about 80 million
users. Yeah, me and 80 million friends.
Yeah. So we know each other. I've been also in my sort of ample free time really getting deep with all the things that I think you're working with around human factors and resilience and sort of cognitive psychology, if you wish.
Right.
Organizational stuff. You know, specifically within our field, which is, you know, large-scale, web-scale systems. But of course, you know, I see how this work has kind of a lineage and application beyond, obviously, where I'm sitting.
Right, right. But I think what's exciting about this is that it's all kind of the same stuff, and that what we're really talking about is reliable, stable performance.
Yep, exactly.
That's pretty cool.
And how the sort of the old and very, I don't know, you might call logical ways of getting there, or how we think we might get there, basically
right,
don't work anymore because we're dealing with a fundamentally different class of systems in terms of complexity.
And that is amazing. And what's amazing is how we're all sort of coming together. We're sort of converging around this notion that the old Newtonian ideas around linear sort of predictable performance and the moral judgments that are sort of laid upon those linear predictable performances, that's all kind of blowing itself out of the water. And now we're in this new complex world that's pretty interesting. I mean, it's really interesting. And that's cool. That's very cool.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of my sort of favorite things is, you know, we run this workshop. It's called Awesome Postmortems, and it's based on a lot of the work that you and folks like Sidney Decker, David Woods, and Richard Cook and so on have been doing, as well as the work of Daniel Kahneman and Gary Klein, who are doing the sort of the, more of the cognitive stuff.
Right.
And, you know, I love that moment when people have that, almost like a paradigm shift where they get it. They go,
yeah,
oh my God, I understand now why this thing that I was trying, you know, kind of trying to put a square peg into a round hole, like I understand why it doesn't fit. And then they start to really seek what, well, okay, I get it now. I'm in a totally different, I've drifted into, right, to use the language, into a totally new area. What can I do here? How do I actually survive in this particular environment? And, you know, I love that moment when people, like, the light goes on.
And these workshops you guys are running, tons of people are taking them. Tell us about those.
Yeah, so we do, we've done close to 10 already, and we do them sort of both publicly. We did one at Velocity in New York a couple of, I guess, weeks ago. It's a day-long thing, and it's a very experiential workshop. You really get a sense of all these things that we sort of talk about, like complexity. We have a kind of an exercise that brings that home. You get a feeling for what it's like to be in a complex adaptive domain as opposed to just thinking about it. The thing that's interesting is it would be really easy for all of us, I think, to put together some what you might call best practices.
Yeah.
You know, like, and put a little nice trademark on it and charge a nice premium for it. That would also be completely inappropriate for the domain, the complexity of the systems and the organizations that we deal with. So there is no one-size-fits-all. So what this workshop really allows you to do is get grounded in the theory of, you know, all the disciplines that we mentioned, human factors, resilience engineering, cognitive science, and then start to figure out how do I go back to my own organization and how do I apply that?
And you have to apply it both technically and also kind of socially, right? I mean, how do you guys deal with that part of it?
Yeah, I mean, so we spend very little time on technology. We sort of, and maybe this is one of those, like, you know, to a hammer, everything looks like a nail.
Yeah.
But, you know, being a manager for, I guess, most of my career now, and kind of being very steeped in organizational health, if you wish, and organizational learning, like, there's a lot of talk about learning organizations, and, you know, there's certainly a lot of talk and books about that. But the question is, how do you actually, like, how do you create a learning organization, and what gets in the way? You know, and so this is one of the angles that we take, one of the things we'd really try to break down and get people to understand, like, what's getting in the way in their organization.
And what are you finding? What are they saying?
So there's levels. I think on a very, very common and very, like, maybe the first level is blame and punishment. You know, a lot has been written by folks like John Alsbaugh, who kind of introduced this concept of blameless postmortems, the blamelessness. Obviously, it's based on a lot of the work that Sidney Decker and folks have been doing on just culture. Retributive.
Yeah, no, that's right. That's how I say it. Now, we might both be wrong, but we're wrong together.
All right, that's good. We're a community of people.
that are wrong.
Wrong in their own unique ways. You know, and why is that important, right? And so part of the workshop, and by the way, I also wrote this little book, and it is a little, it's fast book for people to read to really just get a quick understanding and kind of a gateway into this very large area. And the book's called Beyond Blame, right? So how do you get beyond blame?
Which is very cool. I mean, that's very, very, very cool.
Yeah.
I think the idea – I'm so excited about your book. I think anything we can do to sort of help bolster this conversation, because this is a hard conversation to have because it's so hardwired in people. But I think even more significantly, it's such a cognitive bias we carry. I mean, it's how we see problem solving.
Mm-hmm. 100%. And I think I don't know if Daniel Kahneman would agree, but to me, blame is very much in the category of bias, of, you know, that quick judgment that we jump to, that's almost automatic. Right?
I agree completely.
And out of that thinking, we get a very comfortable story, right? Well, we found the culprit. It's this person. It's this man or woman. And then everybody's happy. You know, the person is punished, and it feels like justice is restored. But then when we really think about it, it's like, okay, well, like, how is it possible that this person was actually able to kind of – that this outcome could come anyway, right?
Right.
And what if we put a different person in that place? Would we never have this outcome? Can we guarantee that it will never happen again? And it's that discomfort that then leads us deeper into, like, the systemic issues that are there, right, that we're all trying to uncover. So that's kind of a big focus of my work with both the book and the workshop. And, you know, we really try to get people to go beyond the obvious, right? As far as biases are concerned, kind of more broadly, like if you read Kahneman, he's not very optimistic about our individual ability to spot biases in ourselves.
Right.
I think there's a ton of research that backs that up. What he says is that I'm no better at I think something like I'm no better at being able to spot biases in myself 40 years into studying them than when I first started.
Okay, that's depressing at every level, don't you agree?
Totally. But wait, there's hope. There's hope. There is hope. And what we see experientially, and I actually need to do a little bit more research whether or not, like, there's research that actually backs this up. But it seems like experientially that on an organizational level, like if you're surrounded by a team of folks that are trained, that know how to spot what a bias looks like, or at least specific biases, right? be that unconscious bias or outcome bias or hindsight bias or fundamental attribution error or sunk cost bias, whatever. There's a gazillion of them. And when we have an environment where I can call you out on it and be like, Todd, listen, that sounds like hindsight bias. Did we really know this at the time? You know, I think then we have hope.
Yeah. Yeah. Any quick answers you've come up with? I mean, any quick ways to check for bias? I mean, any tips or tools that you guys are using that you're thinking about?
So it's a hard one. The hindsight bias is perhaps the easiest to spot because it's so in language, right? So whenever we hear what are called counterfactuals, right? So could have, would have, should have, if only, didn't. I didn't do that. We can train ourselves to be like, well, what did actually happen? Like, this is, it's nice. It's kind of a wishful thinking, you know, like something could have, would have, should have. It's revisionist, if you wish, you know, like trying to go back in time and change how things could have gone. But it's actually not what happened. So let's just get back to in the context of what we call a learning review or postmortem. Let's go back to what actually did happen. What do we know? You know, and so I think that's perhaps the easiest one to identify and to counteract. But others are a little bit trickier. And what we find works really well, and this is – so the workshop that we do is sort of aimed at folks who are going back into organizations to conduct these learning reviews, right? They're sort of facilitators. And so we train them to really listen for what is not being said. That's a very tricky skill. So kind of a deeper level of listening. And to ask very open-ended questions. And we also find kind of experientially that there's a big difference between the asking the question why and asking the question how.
Yeah. Yeah, very big.
So that's essentially... There's good news. And the other good news is I think there's folks like yourselves and others, you know, that are bringing a wealth of experience and research, you know, and we can sort of stand on your shoulders and figure out how the things that you're learning apply to in our field. And most of them do, very much so.
Tell us more about your book. So if I wanted to get your book, or if a bunch of people who listen to this want to get your book, and they will – because there's a bunch of people, there's a surprising amount of people that listen to this. How do I get it?
Easy peasy. You go to Amazon, you search for Beyond Blame, Learning from Failure Success, or you can just go to bit.ly/Beyond Blame.
Cool.
And it'll get you there.
Perfect. 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 How big is it? How many pages? I mean.
So I wrote a book that I myself could actually get through.
Nice.
It's about 70, 80 pages, and it is a fictional story. It is told as a fictional story, but you will recognize very much the characters. If you've been working with kind of large-scale complex systems and organizations, you will know who all these – you will have names to these characters. And it's a story about a failure that almost takes out a pretty large financial institution. And – let me just say that I spent the bulk of my career in large financial institutions. So although the names have been changed to protect the innocent, so to speak, the story will feel really familiar.
What a great idea. Gosh, what a great idea.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, that's a great idea. Yeah. Okay, we're on that one. I'll pump that one as hard as I can. So what are you thinking next? Where are we going? Where are you guys going? Where are we going to meet up again? Is the world changing? I mean, what do you see in the future?
Should we do a pre-mortem about the future?
Yes, let's do a pre-mortem about the future. I'd like to know some stuff, so go for it.
It seems like these ideas are really taking hold in our industry, and our industry being, you know, large-scale, web-scale systems. And one thing, I can't predict the future. This much is true. But what I can tell you is that there's no way in hell that our systems are going to become less complex over time.
Yeah, I agree with you.
So because of that, as a species, actually, it's kind of like in our best interest, almost evolutionary need to be able to learn how to adapt continuously to these systems. And the time scale for that, right, because evolution seems to work on kind of larger time scales, but what we're being asked to do is like on a minute-by-minute almost level.
Right.
And
right.
The adaptations. And so how do we do that? Well, we need to learn how to learn better, right? And so this is kind of the focus of my work as well as your work and many others. And I think we can. And so if we take kind of an evolutionary perspective to this, you know, the biases, they make sense evolutionary from an evolutionary perspective. Yeah?
Yeah.
Because it's like, you don't want to think too much and be like, well, is this really a lion coming at me? And let me measure it in every which way possible and contemplate if I should run away or maybe, you know, feed it some carrots. I don't know, right?
I love that.
It works, right? And there's a reason that it exists. It just, that bit, like, doesn't serve us that well anymore. I mean, sadly, there's not that many lions left. But that's not the main reason. But the main reason is that, of course, we spend most of our days doing kind of creative knowledge work, which is fundamentally different than, you know, subsistence farming or, you know, hunting. And so we need different skills. We need different heuristics. We need different biases that would be actually helpful to us. And so I think as a species, we're going through this transition to kind of build that muscle, if you wish.
That's a great way to look at that. I mean, and I think it's happening fast, and I think it's happening out of necessity, but I think it's also happening because we're really starting to understand kind of the moral implications of these quick judgments.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. And I mean, and that's like the funny thing, because a lot of these things, when you first look at them, I mean, like, certainly was my experience. I'm like, what kind of hippie bullshit is this?
Yeah, that's a good question, too.
Right? Because it's like, what do you mean you don't fire people who take systems down? Are you kidding me? Like, how do you even, like, that's not even an option, you know?
Yeah.
Right? And now, like, many years later, and with a lot of reading, a lot of failure within that whole field, right? To be able to say that, like, well, actually, in many cases, and in fact, most cases, the information that this person holds is way more important than the feeling that you get from punishing that person. And so let's get at that information. Let's actually have real accountability, which is a real account of what happened, which is impossible when there's blame, when there's punishment.
And what I think's stunning about that, and there's a lot stunning about that, is that the bias then becomes, the bias I've become really interested in, Dave, is that the bias then becomes, if we believe they're idiots, then every mistake becomes a choice. And if every mistake becomes a choice, then we're right back into the bias that says we have to punish the bad person for making mm-hmm. the bad choice. And that bias, I think, that roots itself in making error choice. I'm fixated on that. And what's crazy, and I'll say this, this is going to be somewhat controversial, I even think the notion of just culture is an artifact of a bias around blame. To assume justice, we have to assume blame.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not even sure just culture is the way to talk about this. I think we're in a really interesting place on this.
Yeah, and I mean, what you're saying resonates with me so much, right? That, like, on a personal level, I've got two kids, you know, that are studying math or they're doing their homework and it's not working, right? Something is not working. And if I go with my sort of reptilian brain, I'm like, what's wrong with you? How is it that you can't figure this out? It's obvious, right?
Right.
If I slow down and I go with my, I guess, mammalian brain or whatever you call that, that other part that
the good
is able
part of
to,
you, the good part of the brain.
The one that
the non-snake-like part of the brain.
Yes, exactly. Then I'm like, well, wait a second. You know, like, here's a person who's showing up. He doesn't want to make that error. He doesn't want to get the wrong answer on a math problem. He actually wants to do really well for any number of reasons, right? Just like most of us show up to do good work at work. And yet there's something systemic that's preventing this particular individual from learning in the best possible way, right?
Yeah.
And that's a much – I mean, the thing is, it's a much harder question to answer, and it's a much harder problem to sort of debug, but it's the right problem.
And I think you're right on target. Man, what fun. This has been great. I guarantee you you'll be back. I absolutely 100% guarantee you.
I would love to.
How much fun is this? Gosh. Thanks, man. Let's hang out more.
Yeah. Thanks, Todd.
What'd you think, huh? I can't tell you how excited I am. I actually am telling you how excited I am, so you'll have to listen to it. But I want to sort of emphasize how excited I actually am. So the notion of real accountability, the account of what happened, being more valuable than actual accountability is super powerful. And you're going to hear more about that. In fact, that's a topic that David Marks and I took on completely. But Dave Zwiebeck did an amazing job. And when he said, "What kind of hippie bullshit is this?" he had me. I mean, I was completely that he had me. In fact, it's going to take all the power I have to not actually name the podcast that name. But mostly what I want to do in recap for this podcast is to tell you how important it is to realize that all these industries that have a high need to have stable systems, systems that can fail but fail safely and fail predictably, those groups of thinkers are coming together. And we have lots of people, David Woods, Richard Cook, John Ospaugh, all these people play a really important role in bringing these thought leaders together. And the fact that we're coming together is amazing. The fact that there is probably one of the best books on blame written, and it's written by the guy who does systems engineering at Pandora, is remarkable. And what's even more remarkable is that I don't care if you're a doctor or a safety guy or a construction guy or whatever it is you do, we all are thinking about the same problems. And that, my friends, is the reason we do the podcast. I can't thank you enough for being a part of this. Tell your friends, listen up. There's lots of exciting things in the past. Any podcast you want to hear that you can't find on iTunes, they only keep 20 up on iTunes, you can always pick up at the Podbeam site. The entire podcast collection is there, and there's a bunch of them, and there's a bunch of really good ones. Anything else we can do for you, say the word. If you've got something to say, you're always welcome, and I appreciate your support, but mostly I appreciate your feedback. If you think of things you want to talk about, hook me up and we'll talk, that's for sure. Until then, as always, learn something new every day. You can check that off for today. Have some fun, that's still yet to come. And for goodness sakes, be safe.
What kind of hippie bullshit is this?